to get that on tape too. Okay, we're picking up from where we left off yesterday. And we left off yesterday, we started from the beginning, and we're at the very end of Maimer Beis. The date of the tape? Oh, okay. It's election day, what say? Not for me anymore, I voted. But anyway, it's election day. Now it's a regular day, yeah? Yeah. Oh, you need it for that. Okay, it's November 6th. And I guess, what year is it? 2012. I was about to say 1912. But okay, in any case, see? Now you're making it harder. Okay, but anyway, the theme of this midrash was that Hashem never leaves us void of great leadership. Right before any great person passes away, someone else is born who will be ready to eventually assume the mantle of leadership or of greatness in Torah. Now, we had many such examples and precedents. Now the Midrash rolls back as it usually does and is going to explain the question that we mentioned yesterday that the Midrash is going to be bothered with. And that question is, we had Akedas Yitzchak, then we had the news of the new births that reached Avraham Avinu, and then the death of Sarah. How are all of these incidents connected? Or not Akedas Yitzchak, but at least the Shmua that Avraham Avinu heard about his brother Nachor's children and the grandchildren, how is that relevant to the death of Sarah? So the Midrash gave us many precedents where we see that before the son of a great person sets, before that person passes away, someone else of great stature is born who will assume the mantle at some point in the not too distant future. So here, we're also making that point at the very end of Midrash of Maimer Beis. Ad shelo hishkia HaKadosh Baruch Hu shimsha shel Sarah, before Hashem had set the sun or made the sun of Sarah set, meaning before he took Sarah up to his upper world, his riach shimsha shel Rivka, the sun of Rivka shined. Rivka was going to take over. She was already somewhat in the world when, right before Sarah died. Bitchila, at the beginning, hinei Yolda Milka Gamhi Bonim Lenochar Achicha. That's what he doesn't write here. At the beginning it says, behold, Milka, also she gave birth to sons, or it could mean generic to children, to your brother Nochar. And Acharkach, and after that, Vayiyu Chayesara Meyashana. The years of Sarah, the life of Sarah, were 100 years, and of course 20 years and 7 years, as we said before. The Midrash doesn't always have to complete it. Okay, now we have an interesting midrash. What it means and how it came up over here, you will see there are many, many in Sforim of Drush, the homiletic Sforim, the Sifrei Drush, speak about this midrash at length. My Zayde Zichrone Levercha also in Poland, probably in Koivitz Drushim, from what I recall, I found he had a drusha on this, and we reprinted it at the end of his Tshuvas Sefer, Zahayom. But we'll see, I'm going to maybe say a little different over here. Rabbi Akiva Hoya Yoshe V'doirish V'hatzibur Misnamneim. Now, this is pretty normal. Rebbe Akiva is sitting and darshaning. Somebody once asked me, didn't they stand when they darshaned? somebody wrote me in a letter, a bunch of shaylos, and he asked me that question. And I think he was referring to this midrash. But it says in a number of midrashim, Yoshev v'doirish. So, and here he's obviously speaking to a crowd. Why is he sitting? So, what I explained was, in my opinion, sitting doesn't only mean sitting as opposed to standing. Sitting means that you are in a position of permanence, that you're really absorbed in what you're doing. Standing denotes you're not focused or concentrated in the same way. I mean, that's the difference. That's why sitting, the Gemara says, at a certain stage, in Megillah, it says, Rakos Mumad V'Kashas Meyushav, simple things, soft things. Simple things you speak about standing, and difficult things you discuss when you're sitting, or you learn when you're sitting. So sitting means he was very absorbed. That's what I wanted to say. If somebody sounds different, you know, on an election day, it's certainly a free country, you can disagree. But that's my take on Yoshev V'Doirish. V'Hatzibur Misnamnim, the crowd was drowsy. No, and you don't have to be Rabbi Akiva. Even Rabbi Akiva went through that. But unlike most of us who accept it, Rabbi Akiva given zufrieden. He was very unhappy. Bikesh la'oyreron, eretz gevul tufek, and he wanted to wake up everyone. Now, how do you wake them up? Do you bring a cymbal and start clapping? Do you have a cowbell? How do you wake them up? So obviously, their level of sleep wasn't, you know, into the snoring mode, because what he said wouldn't wake them up if they really were. But there was some, and for that reason, there are those in the Svarim of Drush who wrote about their explanations of this midrash, or their homiletics around it, said that it was a difficult time when Rabbi Akiva was publicly speaking. We know those, the Daf Yomi gang learned it just toward the end of Brachas, Daf Samech Beis in Brachas, or Samech Amid Beis, I should say, in Brachas, how Rabbi Akiva was teaching Samech Beis. He was teaching during times of persecution. So some suggest that maybe this was also, this midrash was when he was teaching during times of persecution, and people were just turned off, and that he couldn't, they weren't drowsing because they were bored or sleeping, God forbid, but they were, misnamnim means they're not totally with it, they're not totally awake. So what happened is, he understood that people were a little bit giving up hope. They were under the horrible decrees of the Romans. Rabbi Akiva's life was taken. There were other massacres. And he wanted to get them back. He wanted to win them back. So that's what some say. So Omar, Rabbi Akiva said like this. Ma'ra'asa Esther shetimloch al sheva v'esr mumeya medina. What did Esther see? I don't know what it meant, what she saw. I would have said, What happened? Sometimes seeing is like the word fitting, ra'ui. Ra'ui and ra'a not only are related because there are two root letters that are the same, but they are associated in other places. So when we say, what did Esther see? It means, in what way was she fit? Shetimloch ala sheva v'esr mumeya medina, that she would rule on 127 countries. Now the point is, in my opinion, and I don't know if all the Svarim of Drush say it, but if we're going with Rabbi Akiva trying to give some encouragement to the people, where was Esther? Esther was in the Golus. That was Golus Modai. Right? She was in Golus, right after Golus Bavel for a short while was the Golus of the Midian exile, Golus Modai. And Esther rose in the middle of that, and became a queen. And she became a queen over 127 Medinot. Medinot can mean countries, or it could mean areas. Sometimes Medina means districts. But it was a huge part of the free world of that time that she was that she reigned over. Where did that come from in a time of exile, when the people were so down, even if they were given some rights, and it wasn't quite as repressive as it was under the previous regime of Nebuchadnezzar and his grandson Belshazzar? But still, How did she get to that point? In what zechus? Obviously, the story we know. We all know Megillas Esther's story, but we all know that it's not a normal thing to happen for an innocent, nice Jewish girl who went through so much and didn't even reveal who she was until it came down to the right moment, and she suddenly became a queen. A king doesn't have a clue who she is, where she's from, which was anyway odd. The whole community there, the Jews all knew who Esther was, but she didn't say a word. And she became a queen. The whole thing, the circumstances of how everything happened, how she was selected, how Vashti was killed, let's do a KGB job on the whole empire. We're gonna get every single girl that we have, and you're gonna pick the one that appeals to you most. I mean, it's not a normal story. So that's Rabbi Akiva's real question: what made such a thing happen from Shamayim? What zechus, what merit made it happen? It doesn't happen now. We're in this long galus. Nothing like that ever happened. So, I mean, what is it that she saw, meaning that made her fit, that she would have such a standing and that the redemption came through her? That's what I think the question is here, according to the way, if you say it's connected, misnamna means, as many commentators who have spoken about this and commented about it, means that it's in the context of their repression under the Roman Empire, so then this question makes total sense. He's trying to find a parallel where there was such an unbelievable ending. So he's getting them interested. We're in the middle of a galus. Let's start thinking about Esther. What brought Esther to where she was? So he's going to say an answer that's going to correlate to Sarah's years. 127 districts or countries, 127 years. But I think that this connects to before, and we'll see how. Ella, rather, Tovo Esther. Esther came forth. Or by Rebbe Akiva's time, she had already come. It was in the past. But he's saying it in future tense. Esther will come forth. And I think there's a hint here to how he's bringing comfort to the people. Shehoisa basvita shel Sarah. She was a granddaughter or a descendant, a direct descendant of Sarah Imenu. Shehoisa kuf v'chof v'zayin. She lived also 127 years. So the merit of Sarah's 127 years was the catalyst that v'simloch al kuf chof v'zayin medinos. That Esther would come and rule over 127 countries. Now, I think this was written purposely. It could have said 127, not 127, and rule on 127. But I think he's hinting to before, and I think this is the connection. The connection is to the years of Sarah, that he's saying the 100 years, the 20 years, the 7 years that Rashi and Chumash discusses, that's really predicated on the Midrash we learned yesterday, is to show that all of her years were perfect. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, as much as we will emulate the perfection of Sarah, we can also merit a redemption. That was the way that Esther came. She ruled, obviously Esther had her own accomplishments, but in the Zechus of Sarah, those accomplishments translated into her becoming the queen over 127 districts. So the same way he wants to say, if we work on ourselves at whatever stages of life we're at, and we try to come also to Yemei Tmimim, to days of perfection, days of completion, if we'll emulate Sarah in that way, we've also have a good shot to be rescued from the repression of the Romans. That's what I think it might mean. And so what I would want to suggest as a further step is, What that basically means is Sora's greatness had in it eternity. It had nitzchiyut, nitzchius, ebekait, you'd say in Yiddish. It had eternal, it had eternity to it. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, if there was that type of eternity, that Sora went all the way down thousands of years later to Esther, that eternity can project onto us as well. That's the hope he's trying to tell them. Don't just think that the patriarchs, the Avos, the matriarchs, the Imois are a thing of the past. They're here with us too. Their merit, like it helped for Esther, it can continue and be there for us as well. That's what I think the Midrash means, kipshutoy. I think that's less homiletical than other things that I've seen. That's interesting. Okay. Here is another interesting midrash. We'll go to Maimer Dalad. We'll see if it's time permitting how much we could do. Vatoma Sora Bikiryas Arba. Sora passed away in Kiryat Arba, Kiryas Arba. And then it says, He Chevron, that was Chevron. So it sounds like two names were given to that place, Kiryat Arba and Chevron. So the Midrash tells me, no, there were others there. Dalid Shemus Nikru'ula. The city had four names. One name was after one of the brothers, who was Avram Avinu's Baal Bris. He was somebody who had a covenant with Avram, Eshkol. And then there was Mamre, was also one of the names of the city. Maybe they had large real estate holdings, I don't know. Kiryat Arba, it was called the City of Four. I don't know why yet, but we'll find out. And then Chevron, it was called Chevron. Now, which makes it interesting, Eshkol and Mamre, the cities were also named for them, and they were Avram Avinu's people that with which he had the most special covenant. And Avram Avinu is dealing with having difficulty getting a grave site. Where were Mamre in Eshkol? I'm just asking it as a side question. It's not questioning the Midrash, but it's just a side question. Why were they not there to help? I don't know. Right now, I'm just going to leave that because that's not our main topic. The Midrash, though, asks, V'loma hu koreyosa kiryas arba. Why is this same city? It had another three nice names. Why are you calling it the City of Four? What's so significant about that? So he says the reason is, and this reason we didn't find in Rashi and Chumash. Rashi gives us two reasons why Hebron was called the City of Four. And now we're going to see that there are some additional reasons. So I'm going to see first the Midrash, as I always say, age-wise. The Midrash was older than Rashi. So we'll see what the Midrash says. V'lamahu koireyoysa kiryas arba. Why is the Pasuk referring to this settlement as the City of Forest, Kiryas Arba? Why that name? So he says, Shedoru Bodalit Sadikim. Because Fort Sadikim lived here. They were Oner, Eshkol, Mamre, and Avram. The three brothers, Oner, Eshkol, and Mamre, and Avram. Which is interesting that the Midrash says, calls all four of them Sadikim. Because Oner and Eshkol tried, maybe for good reasons, and they remained Avram Avinu's friends, but they tried to dissuade him from doing the bris. Right, we talked about that last week here, and two weeks ago in Lech Lecha. Yeah, last week I forgot we couldn't be here, but during Lech Lecha we discussed that the Midrash. Why Aner said don't do it? Why Eshkol said don't do it? But they're still called Sadikim. apparently at the level they were at and what was expected of them, they weren't diminished by advising Avraham Avinu not to go through with the Mila, or at least not to go through with it in public, according to some. One opinion, at least Eshkol, said don't go through with it in public. Aner told him you're too old for something like that. But I guess telling somebody they're too old and they should watch it for a major surgery doesn't make you ois tzaddik. It means maybe you have to figure out what Hashem is really wants from you. So that could be, or this midrash disagrees with that midrash. But I like to avoid machlokas in the midrashim. Unless one of the major midrashim, Meforshim and the midrash tells us there's a disagreement, I try to avoid it. What, the name should have been Arba? No, it's the city of four. Four people lived there. We call it, this city stands on these four people. Yeah, Kiryat is a city. Yeah, Kiryat Melech Rav is one of Yerushalayim's names. It's Hebron. Kiryat Arba, he Hebron, it says, right? That's right. Yeah, we'll see if that's a factor. You're bringing up Rashi and Chumash. Very good. Yeah, but that's good. Rashi and Chumash doesn't say that. We'll see what the Midrash says. But the Midrash isn't yet finished here. Here it says another thing that also makes you wonder, based on at least the comment I threw in here. V'nibolu badalet tzadikim. Also in Arba, not only did four tzadikim live there, but four tzadikim became brismans over there. They had a mila. Avram, Oner, Eshkol, and Mamre. So they were all righteous people. And it's interesting, the Midrash here tells us they all ended up undergoing a bris. In other words, not only, which is a big lesson, Avram Avinu was advised by Mamre, go ahead and do it, or do it in public at least. Now, when you give somebody advice, I have a rule in life, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. It plays with me very well. If somebody tells me to do something that I know they wouldn't or couldn't do, I have zero respect for them, for their advice. You wouldn't do it, you couldn't do it, you're going to tell me to do it? Who are you to tell me? If I believe that somebody would do something, if somebody tells me to stick my head in fire, and I know they would do it, then I might do it too. But if they wouldn't do it, they're scared, but Brisbane, you stick your head in, I'm not going to do it. Why should I listen to you if you wouldn't do it? You know, I believe that's the strength that every leader has, is people believe that if they were in the leader who's telling them what to do were in the same circumstances, they would probably do it. That's why sometimes people ask me advice, and I tell them, I don't know what I would have done in your position. This way, at least I show that I know what they're going through. But if you're not sympathetic, you just tell me I have to do something, then it's not only that you wouldn't go through it yourself, but you're telling me to do it, you're not even sympathetic to what the problem is. Part of feeling a problem is knowing what you would do about it if you had to live through it. So to me, it's very logical that if Mamre told Avraham Avinu, go through, make yourself a brisman, Mamre was ready to do it himself. That's my feeling. I don't know if that's written in the Midrash. I don't know if it's true. But the Midrash says that he had a bris. And apparently once Avram did it and Mamre did it, Aner and Eshkol, even though they initially might have discouraged Avram Avinu, but they were righteous. And they took a bris too. That's sometimes what happens when somebody might dissuade you from something worthwhile and you do it anyway, they become inspired and influenced and they end up doing it. That might be what the Midrash is saying here. I don't know if we want to take this Midrash and telescope it with what we said in Lech Lecha. It's very logical to make that assumption. If someone will prove me incorrect or disagrees, even not on election day, I'm open to listen to other opinions. But that's something that it's a thought that I have. I can't prove I'm right, but it's just something. Maybe it's more what I think externally, and I'm just fitting it in. That could be. I don't know. It's just something that I suggest, and anyone can say different. Now here comes the reason that Mr. Dorman told us that Rashi and Chumash brings. Kiryas Arba, Dovar Acher, another reason why the city was called Kiryas Arba, Ishenikberu bo dalit tzadikim avos ha'olam, four tzadikim who were the fathers of the world were buried there. This one is picking on the four males. Then the next Dovar Acher we'll see, I'm going to cheat and tell you what's ahead, is about the four matriarchs that are buried there. Now Rashi in Chumash makes a sandwich and combines both of those, and he says, Al Shem Arba Zugo Shinik Berusham. It was because four pairs of distinguished people were buried there. Adam Arishan and Chava, and the three Avos, and three of the four Imos. So Rashi in Chumash gives us a little compound deal. He makes a sandwich of the two that are written as two separate ones. Why they're written separately, I really don't know. Why couldn't you say the four pairs? That I don't know the reason. And especially at this time, not all four Avos were buried there. Only Adam and Chava were there, but the other three weren't there. So why would that be a reason to call it Kiryas Arba? Unless you'll say somehow they called it that for the external reasons, the current reasons, but the real meaning in the long run was meant to project something in the future. That could be. But Nikberu Bo Dalit Tzadikim Avos Ha'olam, Adam Arishan, Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. Or Dovar Acher, this I can jump a little with. Shenikbru Dalet Imois, the four matriarchs were there, Chava, Sarah, Rivka, and Leah. Then he says another reason that Rashi brings. Another reason, but it doesn't say Dovar Acher here. So in my younger years, I wrote on the margin of my midrash, here is another interpretation we're going to see. It's al shem ba'oleha shehem dalid. The people who ran Chevron, who were the ultimate owners, which is maybe why Eshkol and Mamre couldn't intervene for Avram, were four people. There was Onok, which means giant, but that was the name of the person, and his three sons. Were one of them was Og Melech HaBoshan, but they were there. They were in full control at that time. And that isn't written here as a Dovar Acher. Rashi writes it as a Dovar Acher in Chumash. But here, Rashi writes this interpretation as the first one. And then he writes the alternate interpretation because of the four pairs of righteous man and wife that are buried there. And here it's brought as the last suggestion. So I wanted to suggest the fact that doesn't write it as an alternative suggestion means that everyone agrees, because in the present it was Kiryat Arba because of the Anak and his three sons. They were there, and all of the others are names that are on the future. But the simple way is it was at that time Kiryat Arba because of the four giants who ran the show in Chevron. Right? The others are telling me why it's called Kiryat Arba for the future. When I identify it with Chevron, and Chevron was maybe called Chevron already at that time. We do have that it was called Chevron at that time. So, but still, the name Kiryat Arba remained forever, even after the four people who were not very kind and righteous people were gone. They kept the name. Why did they keep the name? So that you have the interpretations of before, either because of the tzaddikim that were there, they wanted the name to remain beyond that generation, beyond the stage of intimidation, or it was because by that time, when the Anak and his sons were out of the scene, they were off the out of the picture, it was meant because of something that was there at the time, the four pairs that were buried there at that time. So that would be why there are alternate interpretations before. But for the Anak, there are no alternate interpretations. That's all in the Midrash. But Rashi says it is two different pshatim in Chumash. Rashi says Kiryat Arba is al-shem the four the people that were there, the Achiman Sheshai Talmai Vaviyam and their father. And that's why it was called Kiryat Arba. Then Davar Acher, because there were the four zugas, al shem arba zugas shayusham. So Rashi says it is two different pshatim. But I wondered years ago I said on that like this, how do you have such diverse opinions? Either the city is named for Rishayim or it's named for Tzadikim. What's that all about? So I said like this, I suggested, and this is probably more less in pshat but more homiletic, but I said that there's a very famous mashal that the Chofetz Chaim said. He said, you look at, and he named a number of very well-known cities that were known for either outstanding yeshivas that were there, or they were outstanding in other ways, but they were kleine shtetlach, they were small little towns. Like his town, Radin, was a very small town. Those who were there could tell you about it. Mir, the city of Mir, where there was the famous Mir Yeshiva. Slabotka was a little town. There were other towns. Valoshin was relatively small. So the Chofetz Chaim said, when you have a map of the world, all these places are little, relatively insignificant dots in a map of Poland or Russia or Lithuania. But he said, in the Shamayim, the map is much different. A lot of the bigger cities with very little Torah, very little righteousness are small, and the little Mir and the little Slabotka and the little Radin are huge cities. So I wanted to say that that's also happening over here, that it depends. If you determine the city by something that's physically important to you, you'll name it after the four giants. If you're going to say the greatness of the city is measured by the tzaddikim that were there, your same Kiryat Arba that one person, the other guy, might talk about those four, when I say four, I mean another four. That's basically what I said. B'derech drush. I don't think that's the simple way. Okay. Now, Rabbi Azariah says a totally different reason why Kiryat Arba was Kiryat Arba. He's taking us back to some of what we covered 2 weeks ago in Lech Lecha. Is it time already? Are we running past time? Yeah, we're running a little past time, so should we stop here? Yes, we're back on tape. Okay, now Rabbi Azariah says another reason why this city was called the Kirya, the city of four. And this is going to be a totally different way. Now, Shemisham, from this city, Yotza Avinu Avram, our patriarch Avram, came out from Chevron. And what did he do? Sherodaf Achrei Arba Malchuyos. He ran after the four kings. So he was, when he found out about Lot being captured, he was with Aner Eshkol and Mamre, it says there. And from there, they sat and they took care of all the provisions, and Avram went to battle. So he went out from Chevron after the four kings. So it was called Kiryat Arba to grace the victory of Avram Avinu. So he went after Kuz Muk Ratorin, which is a word of emperors, of great kings. So Avram Avinu went up. He went in pursuit after these kings. Shehu Ole Bekarnosim Shel Dalid, which seems to be another point, but he says like this, that he went after, according to Rashi's Perush, Kuzmu Koltorin is Greek, and it means a world, the leaders of the world, the rulership of the world were these four. And then the result was that Chevron Also, and this could be an alternate pshat, but it seems like it's a continuation. Shehu ole bekarnosim, although Rashi has bekinsaron, he has a different a text, shel arba, which basically means it comes to what it means is it was under the leadership of four different people. I'll go with that pshat. Rashi has a different pshat. I'll go with the Matnas Kahuna because that seems to fit the words better. Bitchila li Yehuda, first Yehuda was in control of Chevron, and later on Achar Kach Kolev had it, and Achar Kach it was to the Levim, and then Achar Kach to the Kohanim. So therefore, Chevron was called Kiryas Arba because of the future, that it would be run or ruled eventually by four different people. It was in Shevet Yehuda in its Gorol. They gave it to Kolev. Then it became a city of refuge for Arei Miklat, which is Leviim. And then in the times of Ezra, it went to the Kohanim. So it had four different cycles of Jewish level ownership. There's another pshat here, also without a dover acher. Vehu echod midalad mekoymes megunim shebe eretz Yisrael. It was also a kirya of four. It was like a one of four. Why it had this name and the other three didn't, I don't know. But it was one of four places in Israel that were less fertile. It wasn't as blessed a land as the rest of Eretz Yisrael. It was a place of hard rock, and it wasn't fertile, it wasn't conducive to good cultivation. And there were three other such sites as well that are... And ve'eluhein, and what are they? What are the four? So Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbanan have a disagreement on that. Rabbi Yitzchak says, Dor v'nofis, dor timnas serach and chevron. So he says that they are these places, dor v'nofos, and timnas serach, chevron. And the Rabbonin say it's Dona v'kiryasne v'timnaserach in Chevron. So I don't know what the difference is contingent upon. The Radal here in his Perush tries to bring a basis for these opinions, but it's not. I'm not that intimately familiar. Okay, I think now we can stop.